This is all old.
Look.
Look at this.
100% pure oil. This barite came from this hole right here, just flat on the top. Just see how it's got the hard surface and it looks like dirt, but when you scrape it off, it's all oil underneath.
Look at
it's oil, there's no doubt.
How can they say this is clean? Look at this. As far as you can look up in here, look.
And look, the thing is, okay, whether it's clean or it's not clean or whatever, where is the people cleaning it up right now? Where are they right now? We're standing right here. We shouldn't be able to stand up in a pile of oil and not see a person in sight cleaning up something that is still here.
Darla Rooks, the captain of a shrimp boat called the Cajun Queen, has taken us out to her old shrimping grounds, a place called Bay Jimmy on the Mississippi River Delta. Joining us is her deckhand and husband, Todd Rooks. Bay Jimmy is a patchwork of wetlands and open water, but the marshy islands here look different than they did a year ago. Healthy grass used to grow to the water's edge. Now there's stubble where there used to be grass, and the ground looks blackened and dead. When you step there, the goo that bubbles up ruins your shoes and the cuffs of your pants.
This is really plush, beautiful green marsh. This is normally a really pretty, pretty place to be, you know, that you would really enjoy pulling your boat up to the bank and fishing right here and getting out and walking on the bank. Right now, nobody wants to touch us. You know, now we got to get it back into the boat with oil covered all over our feet. And then wherever we walk, we're bringing this stuff. But, you know, we don't have any choice. This is the only way to see it and to find out and to tell the truth. The truth has to be told. Somebody has to tell the truth.
April 20th marks the one-year anniversary of the Deepwater Horizon blowout, which triggered the most damaging oil spill in world history. It's too early to gauge the complete cost of the BP disaster. But we do know that it upended lives in ways that defy quantification. Here's the story of one such life, of one shrimper's journey from despair to defiance.
My name is Darla Rooks. I'm from southeastern Louisiana in Plaquemines Parish. Growing up in Happy Jack was a really wonderful event. We totally lived off the land. We ate everything that was available from alligator, nutria, coon, birds, all the different birds that's out there, fish, crabs, shrimp. We did plenty of living off the land, but you didn't just eat off the land. You had to go and catch it. So we learned how to catch, how to hunt, how to fish, and that's what we became really, really good at. So when it came time for making a living, that's the best thing to make a living at is what you've already learned your whole life from the time you can walk is you're learning this. That's what you do, and that's how it gets passed on from generation to generation.
Darla did leave for a while at 17 to get it out of her system, she says. She drove an ambulance, worked as an EMT, shucked oysters at the airport. She met Todd, also from Plaquemines Parish, through his sister. Todd had grown up on the water too, but he was a welder when they met. On the day they married, she walked down the aisle in her shrimp boots.
I was working offshore, and I came home after a hitch, and my wife tells me she bought a boat. And it was a piece of junk, but it was a steel hull boat, and she said, well, you're a welder, so there it is. And we had the engine was in boxes, and there was nothing there, and we just put the whole boat back together and decided to give it a shot, and everybody laughed at us, but we hung in there, and we're still there today.
The Rooks' current boat, the Cajun Queen, is a far sturdier vessel. A sturdy boat is important. Shrimping is grueling, dangerous work. On average, 5 to 6 Gulf Coast shrimpers die on the job each year. For Darla and Todd, each shift is an all-night race against the tides, fueled by Red Bull and cigarettes. On a good night, they could pull up thousands of pounds of shrimp. It must be emptied, sorted, and iced before they can return to shore. And if a cable breaks, Todd might have to dive 30 feet into the water, holding his breath as he makes the repair. Still, it's the only work that makes the couple happy.
If you ever seen somebody with gold fever in a gold mine, that's what it's like in my head when I'm shrimping. It's not that you're exactly on top of the gold, but you know the gold's out there somewhere, and you just got to keep on going till you find it. You're totally free. It's like an artist painting a picture. He has nothing on his mind but that picture. So all your other problems and all your other worries, except for the ones on that boat, just totally disappear. They're non-existent. And it's just, it's being in a totally different world because you're not connected with traffic. You're not connected with the internet. You're not connected with anything that has to do with society. And it's so beautiful that you want to share it with people, but there's nobody to share it with. The sun rises, the sun sets, the dolphins, the birds, just totally free, free of everything that is trouble in this world, totally free.
For Darla, the BP oil spill felt like a slow motion horror show. One by one, the waters with the biggest, most lucrative shrimp began to close. Then shrimping was suspended altogether. For 5 months, when the Cajun Queen should have been harvesting shellfish, it stood idle. With no steady income, the Rookses gave up their rental house. They moved into the tiny cabin of their boat, and they slept in those bunk beds till the weather grew cold.
Nobody could talk to me. Nobody could deal with me. Every day that the sun came up and the sun went down, I was just in total tears and panic, just knowing that this could be the last day I'd ever be able to shrimp again. We had plenty of time to sit on a boat, wonder how we was going to make a living, go around and look at all affected areas and things like that. And all I did was just sink into a deep depression.
I was really angry at her because her depression was bringing me down so bad. I just stayed angry all the time. That it started causing a lot of conflict between us. Then you had to look at it from her point. You know, everything she had from a childhood was, to her, was coming to an end. It was hard to talk any sense into her for trying to do something. And
I actually hung a hangman's noose from the back of my boat. Had a sign on the boat said, "I need a work, BP."
And she told me she's just about ready to put her head in it and just jump off the picking box. So I said, "You got to be out of your mind." You know, but that's where she was. But every day it was like that. Wake up. Most of the time she didn't even want to wake up. Just total depression. It was just very upsetting.
We couldn't shrimp. I came to Mississippi to my daughter's house to see what it looked like over here on the beach. The beach was covered with blobs of oil everywhere. I'm walking through the beach, getting more and more depressed. Nothing but tears. I can't believe this has happened to my whole world. This is my whole world. The Gulf Coast is my world. A man saw me, and he was in a automobile. He had a light on the top, and I figured he was one of the people. They had plenty of people to keep you off the beach and arrest you if you refused to leave the area. So I figured he was coming to arrest me, so I walked up to him ready to get arrested, and he happened to be a medical doctor, and his name's Dr. G. And he washed my hands and gave me a hug and told him all my symptoms, that I'd stop having periods. My head was just killing me. I couldn't stop the headaches no matter what I took. It was just a continuous headache. All I get is maybe a 15-minute break between headaches. It never stopped. Muscles jumping, heart spasms, chest pains, just everything you could imagine to just fall apart all at once. And I just knew I was dying. So I figured my whole world was gone. There was nothing left to live for, because this is all I live for, is to fish. And that's what feeds my family. And if I can't feed my family and I can't be happy, there's no sense in living. So he saw that I was real depressed. And, you know, I told him, I said, "Well, you know, I figured you're just talking to a dead person anyway. I'm just a dead man walking, you know, thanks to BP. And probably won't last much longer. I'm not going to sit here and suffer. I'm going to kill myself." And he said, "You know, that's probably exactly what BP would want. BP would want for you to kill yourself." And I looked at him, I said, "You think so?" He said, "Yep." "You know why? Because dead people don't talk. Dead people don't sue. Dead people don't fight back. Dead people don't complain. And dead people aren't going to change anything. If you want to change something, stand up, get strong, fight back, tell the truth."
That's exactly what she's done. Since her encounter with Dr. G, Darla has spoken out at town hall meetings, talked with journalists, and sparred publicly with claims administrator Kenneth Feinberg. She has described her brief stint working for BP's cleanup program, where she was kept away from the pollution and told instead to stuff plastic bags into other bags. She has made clear her belief that her symptoms are linked to oil or dispersants, and she has worried aloud that the spill has wrecked a fragile ecosystem, her ecosystem, for generations. Here's a moment from our trip into Bay Jimmy.
All dead oyster shells washed up, that's not normal. If there is shells on the bank, they're always alive. That's not normal. Every shell's open, empty, dead. And that's, if you can
You might not recognize it, but this is actually a small oyster. This is our baby oysters. See the crack in it? That means it's dead. It's dead. It's dead from BP stuff. See the black oil in it? That's why it's dead. This is our, what takes 3 more years for us to reproduce and start harvesting. I have 1,800 acres of this. And BP hasn't paid me 1 cent on my oysters. I don't know how it's going to come back. I don't know how or if or when. And neither does anybody else. How can they say it's cleaned up when it's not? Nothing's back to normal. Nothing's back to normal anymore.
Todd is more reticent. He understands his wife's outspokenness, but he worries.
I went from being mad at her to trying to hide my face from her. Because the more it seemed like she spoke out, it seemed like the more we was thrown to the back of the line for things. And then I started getting upset again because her speaking was probably is what was holding us from getting a job anywhere. And to me, she was doing more harm than good, but she couldn't be quiet about something she was passionate about. So the only thing you can do is back up and let her go.
Todd admits he'd rather Darla be in the spotlight. If it were him, he might just start throwing punches. For her part, Darla says that speaking out is the most important work she's ever done.
When I'm an old lady and they ask me, you were there when the oil came into Louisiana, what did you do? I don't want to tell them that I sat there and watched the news and did nothing. I want to tell them that I did everything I possibly could do until I couldn't do it no more. It's time for people to stand up, not be scared of Big BP, because I'm not scared of Big BP or any Obama or anybody else. All I'm going to do is die one time. When I die, it really don't make no difference to me. But until I die, I'm going to tell the truth.
In Bay Jimmy, Louisiana, I'm Barry Yeoman.